at Starbucks one morning. It was dead week. Finals were upon them. Everybody was walking around zombie-like, sleep-deprived, hungry, anxious, fearful. "So what are you doing after graduation?" Isaiah asked. Jeremiah looked down into his cup. "I've been thinking a lot about that. I've been to the career counselor. I've taken a bunch of tests, and they all come back pretty much the same. I've got excellent grades. I've got a great memory. I have fantastic speaking skills. But I also have a flair for the dramatic. I have problems with authority. I have a love for grandstanding and generally annoying people. So what are they recommending?" Isaiah pressed. "Most of them are saying law." Jeremiah paused. "My pastor thinks I ought to go into the ministry. I think he's just messing with me. I would get in so much trouble in the ministry. Can you imagine?" Jeremiah. You know, we can't be sure of the precise details of Jeremiah's call into that dangerous, countercultural prophetic ministry, but this is probably not the way it all went down, right? But this is the way that we are schooled to organize our lives, correct? David Brooks is, in my opinion, one of the very few sane conservative commentators out there. Over the years, get an amen for that? Over the years, he's written some really great books. He wrote The Social Animal a few years ago. He wrote Lobos in Paradise. His newest book is The Road to Character. And it's a challenge to the way our culture tends to be satisfied with external success and fairly allergic to deeper values, what he calls eulogy virtues. You know, the things that might get talked about at your funeral, like kindness, faithfulness, and honesty. And so in his book, he says, if you actually listen to a commencement address, you'll hear the speaker say things like, "Follow your heart and find your passion and chase your dreams." The idea here is that figuring out where to go with your life is kind of like creating a business plan. You take an inventory. You look at all of your gifts and talents, and you kind of line them up. And then based on that inventory, you set some goals, and then you work out a strategy on how you're going to get to those goals. Brooks invites us to consider another way. Instead of asking, he says, what do I want from life? What do I want to get out of life? He suggests a different question. What does life want from me? What is life asking of me? And he tells the story of Frances Perkins, who was from an old middle-class Maine family, and she was working to end child labor, and she literally stumbled upon the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, one of the most famous fires in American history. Perkins joined a horrified group of onlookers, watched the upper stories of this building aflame, and the helpless women who were trapped up there, and they kept calling to them, "Don't jump, help is on the way." Well, some of them did jump, and there was no help on the way. The fire escapes were blocked. There was no sprinkler system in the building, and a number of the doors were locked from the outside. They literally couldn't get off some of the floors, and 146 garment workers died. For Perkins, the aftershock of that fire galvanized her. She moved from a life of genteel good works into the rough and tumble of politics and labor organizing. This was not a career that she chose based on her gifts and talents or what she wanted to get out of life. She heard the call of life. Most of you know Perkins as the major force behind the New Deal. In fact, the one who held FDR's feet to the fire on following through on his promises. And you also know Jeremiah, how did the calling happen with him? We have a pretty stylized story here, but we can guess it probably had something to do with the community that he grew up in. Jeremiah's home, Anathoth, was about 3 miles north of Jerusalem. He was a member of a priestly family. And that priestly family had long been opposed to the self-indulgence and the pretension of all of those kings that had followed David and Solomon. They'd long been concerned about the lack of concern of those kings with widows and the orphans and the poor. Jeremiah was also likely well-grounded in a very hostile view of the economic and military power that Israel had gained over the years. Troubled that a nation that was called by God to be a holy people seemed to be no different than the surrounding empires. Jeremiah responded reluctantly to the call to be a prophet. The calling meant that he would be delivering a message that would not be winning friends and influencing people. It would likely land him in jail. If you've ever dipped into Jeremiah, you know that he gets the blue ribbon for the most difficult, most unwelcome, most troublemaking speeches maybe in the whole Bible, which I guess should make him an honorary founding member of the Progressive Church. Amen? Even at a young age, he knew this, and in our text, Jeremiah is backpedaling as fast as he can out of the prophecy business. I'm too young, get somebody who's older and wiser, blah, blah, blah. I think it's safe to say that prophets was not the life that Jeremiah would have planned for himself. But he responded to the call of God, to the call of life with a capital L. He was thrown by God into that time and place to bring a message that would, yes, tear down and that would destroy, but that would also plant seeds and it would build up. There are call and response stories all over the Bible. Moses called at the burning bush. Isaiah in the temple. Jesus at his baptism. Paul on the road to Damascus. And when we talk about call stories, at some point you may begin to think, this is not really about me, is it? Isn't this about those folks who find their purpose in a moment of deep revelation and they live happily ever after, fulfilled lives like Jeremiah, who, by the way, did not live happily ever after, but that's a story for another time. So what I want to do this morning is I want us to take these call stories, the call of Jeremiah, all those other Bible people, and I want to stretch them just a little bit. Actually, I don't want to stretch them a whole lot. And I want to begin to see, that these stories are formalized, stylized ways of describing something that is offered to everyone in every moment. The possibility that you have right now in this worship service or as you leave to follow the leading of love rather than the leading of habit or of ease or of just plain meanness. To pay attention to the summons of God wherever we are, not just at the beginning of our life or at the end of our life, in whatever we're doing, in every moment, in every season of life, to listen. Barbara Brown Taylor, whom I've quoted probably too many times, she talks about struggling through seminary and trying to find that one deep purpose in life, because that's what you're supposed to do when you're a pastor, right? You're supposed to find your deep calling. You're supposed to hear voices and things like that. I even had a seminary friend who claimed that he heard his call from God and it was a loud voice, but it was speaking in Russian. His Russian was not too good. That was awesome. So you can get confused if you're a pastor. And so basically she came up short until she heard something like an answer in deep prayer, and it went like this: do anything that pleases you and belong to me. Do anything that pleases you and belong to me. I love that. On the one hand, absolutely no help, right? Because it puts the ball firmly back in your court, because now you have to figure out what pleases you. And for most of us, the things that really please us are kind of ridiculous and maybe not worthy of a lot of our time and attention. But on the other hand, it's kind of a relief, because it means that whatever we do and wherever we are, the way we do it, the how, is so much more important than the what. And so over the years, Taylor says that she held all kinds of different jobs in the church, and every one, she said, I had ample opportunity to choose kindness over meanness. Every one of those opportunities gave me the chance to recognize the divine in ordinary people. How is that going, by the way? Recognizing the divine in ordinary people when you're out. It goes pretty good in here, right? Pretty simple. But how about when you're shopping? Or when you're in the restaurant and the order is late? Or when you're out on the trail? The Holy calls us in each moment, no matter where we are or what we're doing. As Jeremiah discovered, the Holy One is relentless. And for some of us, that deep purpose comes from our work. And some of you do some amazing things in your work that are about building up this community. For others, it's found in raising children or grandchildren. For some, it's found in what we do in our hours outside of work. Not everybody is so lucky to be able to work in mission and justice all week long, right? And so many of you work in other places during the week, and then you're here to help with Open Door or Fig Leaf or a justice ministry. But is that any less hearing the call of God? Is it? Last week, Linda and I saw an amazing movie. I commend it to you. Room. Based on the story of a young woman who was abducted as a teen, and she was held as a prisoner in a man's backyard in his shed for 7 years. The shed is soundproof, it is locked with computer code, and the only access, the only way to even see outside is the tiny skylight in the roof of the shed. The movie opens in the room. And even on the big screen, it feels so claustrophobic. The room is not even the size, barely the size of this stage area up here. The woman gives birth to a child. And the purpose of her life from that moment on is, in that small space, creating a livable world for her son. So they do calisthenics every day. And they run relay races back and forth in the little room. And they make toys from scraps. And they sing songs. And they celebrate just the smallest, smallest things. She uses every ounce of her ingenuity that she can muster to create a place of wholeness for her son in the midst of terrible evil. As we were leaving the film, I wondered if her work in that shed with her son, if that was not doing the work of God, if that was not responding to the call of God, then I have absolutely no idea what that is or what it means. There was a cartoon in the paper this morning. A grandfather was walking with his grandson, and the grandson said, "Every night I dream of porpoises." His grandfather said, "Oh, really? How come?" The little boy said, "Well, every night, Mom says, we go to bed, I want you to think about your porpoise." The grandfather said, "Well, I think she probably means your purpose, but I understand how thinking about porpoises might be more fun." Maybe. Irenaeus, one of our earliest church theologians, once wrote, "The glory of God is a human being full of life. If I ever get anything tattooed on any part of my body, is our high calling, my friends. Not to sleepwalk through our days, but to live with purpose. To respond to the call of life itself, to use the gifts that God has given us where